What's up, guys? Alex Contreras alongside Eli Sussman, Ethan Badowski. Ethan coming in with a little bit of the Bud Lights, you know what I'm saying, here at the barbecue. Isaac, welcome. Yo, before we start, anyway, hey, Isaac, let me see your ID, man. How old are you?
Anyway, old enough to be here. Thanks, man.
We're excited to have you guys along, talk some Marlins barbecue, talk some Marlins baseball. Where do we start, man? Ethan, what are you thinking about the team? Isaac, what are you thinking about the team?
It's been a tough stretch that they're in right now. It's just the lack of consistency. It's really frustrating, honestly, to watch them, you know, two games at Wrigley Field go for 21 runs in two nights. And then they've scored two runs in their last three games here, in this, the third game against the Cubbies and then the two games against the Blue Jays so far. So like I said, the inconsistency in the lineup, the offense, it just feels like it never gets going, and you're sitting there and you just kind of know exactly what's going to happen, and it unfolds right before your eyes. Like last night, you just kind of could feel that they weren't going to get the bats going right from the beginning. And Starling Marte does what he does, and he basically carries the team right now and carrying the offense. And they have some guys that seem like they're getting there. Like Aggie seems to be swinging the bat a little better the last couple of days, putting the bat on the ball. Just nothing's really falling for him right now. But they could use to get Jazz going again. He's in a bit of a cold rut, even though his plate discipline has been, you know, solid for what you're looking for from him. But it's a frustrating year, Alex. You know, it's been really up and down with all the, you know, how good the pitching's been. And it just feels like that Sandy game in St. Louis when he goes 8 1/3 and loses 1-0, you know, on a walk-off in the ninth inning. It just feels like that was the perfect summary of what we've been this year. The pitching has been outstanding, and the offense, you just can't get anything going on offense. So it's been a frustrating year, but I think people got their expectations a little wild after what we experienced last year. And their expectations are coming down from the sky high expectations that they had before the year. And they're coming back to earth a little bit, and it's frustrating and upsetting, but that's just kind of how it is.
What about you, Isaac? How do you feel?
You know what, man? The word I would describe is deflating. It's a little bit those two games, man. We come into Miami after a promising series against the Cubs, and you know those are two winnable ball games against Toronto, albeit a good ball club. But you know what? Those are two games that you have to win. You know, Ross Stripling, if you're two of the best pitchers in the National League East, pitching for you in Sandy and Trevor, and you come out of there scoring two runs the entire series, it's not going to get it done. It's frustrating. I was at the game yesterday, and besides a couple of line drives, just, you know, they were having their way with us. A leadoff double by Duvall in the ninth and nothing else after that. It's just like Ethan said, it's frustrating because of how well the pitching has been doing. But other than that, it's, you know, it's reality sinking in that it's not going to be 2021 or maybe even, you know, anytime soon, unfortunately.
You know what I'm thinking, man? If we're so – we got this spectacular farm, right, and we got these pitchers – and Sandy's like had, unfortunately, he's had bad luck. He's had two hell of a ball games. He went complete game. Like, man, he still lost. Like, the Marlins haven't backed him up with no runs whatsoever, right? Pablo's doing all right. He had that one odd start, right? But Marlins need offense, right? And you look at the Toronto Blue Jays and, like, man, you look at a guy like Vlad Jr. Why don't we just – we eventually have to make a trade, man. Why don't we just make a move? You know what I'm saying? Straight up, let's just Sandy for Vlad or Sandy and somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
No, Sandy, it's wishful thinking, but we need something like that. They need something that will just jumpstart them. They need a hitter that's going to be their premier guy. You know, we've been looking for a Soto, an Acuna, a Vlad, a Tatis type. And it just had that guy hasn't rolled through yet. You know, I think Jazz is going to be a really solid baseball player, and I definitely think he'll be a bit of a star in this league. But, he's going to have his struggles at points this year. Obviously, he struggled last year. So they've just been crying out for this, for a guy that's just going to jump up right away. And like, okay, I kind of thought that was going to be JJ Bladé, but he's having a tough time in Double A right now. I think he'll come on eventually. He's going to be a really good player. But yeah, at some point with this surplus of pitching, we saw what they did with Gallen and Jazz. Like at some point, they're going to have to make one of these big moves and just, you know, move on from one of their major league guys and say, we've got so much to protect us against losing this guy that we can go out and make a move for a premier bat. And it's, you know, I'm not talking about like a prospect, you know, I want like, it's time to get an established young bat in here. You know, obviously those guys, the Acuñas, the Vladdies, the Tatises, those guys are untouchable. They're not going anywhere, but you know,
they're not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. If they call you and they say, "Hey, listen, I'm giving you Pablo Lopez, Sandy Alcantara, straight up.
It's, you know,
I'll give you Jesus Aguilar to replace his bat. You figure it out."
It's, you know, it's tough. Sounds good. It sounds good in theory, but it's just like, you know, but I don't know. They do have to at some point get an established bat that's proven that they can hit at the major league level, because, you know, except for a few guys, they don't really have that yet. You know, you've got Marte, Aguilar, and Duvall has proven he can hit home runs, but what else has he really proven he can hit? So, you know, they need something established is, I think, the most important thing. And they got to find 7, 8, 9 guys that can, you know, be consistent hitters, because the offense just isn't consistent enough. Hasn't been for years, really.
Let me spin it to you, Isaac. What do you think?
You know, I was actually thinking about that in the car on the way here. If they're not going to spend the money, which, you know, it's looking like they're not, you're going to have to make some trades now, because right now you have the pitching. It's not, you know, exactly Syndergaard, Harvey, and DeGrom, but you have incredible pitching. You have Sixto, Edward, Eater, Meyer coming. You're going to have great pitching for a very long time, so you're going to have to make some trades. You can trade a Connor Scott. You can trade a Peyton Burdick. Maybe that wouldn't have been a horrible trade for Wilson Contreras. Maybe you trade a Kyle Nicholas or a Zach McCambly. You can get some quality bats in return for those guys. You know what I mean? Like, right now is the time. You have those pitchers. You have them. And when you have the pitching, it doesn't stick around for all, you know, forever. So, you know, if I'm them, you got to make a few trades. And like Ethan was saying, there's a lot of players that, you know, that aren't even top 10 prospects that would net back some pretty decent offensive players, in my opinion, like a Kyle Nicholas, anyone. I think they need to do it this year, because who knows, you know, how much longer Pablo's going to be effective. And, you know, they got to do some trades for sure.
That's why I think that at the deadline, you know, that's obviously the big storyline coming up, is that the deadline is kind of around the corner. And it's like, you can kind of look at it and say, okay, well, they're going to do some selling for sure. You know, they're going to try and trade a guy like Floro, a guy like Duvall, I think, could be on the move. Dickerson, if he's healthy, you know what I mean? Like, there are guys that you look at, and, you know, we can talk about Marte all we want, but we talk about that enough everywhere else. But my point is, they can do a mix of selling and buying. And I think a good way to do some buying is to, you know, take advantage of that surplus the way we saw with the Jazz trade, and go out and get a really good hitting prospect or somebody that, you know, already can hit in the big leagues. So, yeah, you know, I saw something on Twitter recently where it was like, the Marlins are their window's opening, like with the starting pitching you have, where you have three headline starters in Trevor, Pablo, and Sandy. They're all under 26 years old. This is your time, you know, now is your time. And to not surround them with proper hitting and a proper offense is a bit of malpractice in a way, because you just gave up a year of what they're going to be able to do. And they're going to be able to do it for a long time, it looks like. But, you know,
I love Sandy, and I keep going back to Sandy and Pablo. And I just feel like, man, damn, like Isaac was talking about, these young studs are about to come up. And they have to let the kids play. You got to let the young kids develop and all that. And man, I really hope Dickerson can get healthy and we can find a trade partner for him, because Jesus Sanchez is looking sweet. Lewin Diaz has got a sweet swing too.
I'm you know, very high on him.
There's very lots of excitement if you're a Marlins fan, for sure. You know, you're just looking for them to turn this wave. I agree with you when you talk about Jazz and he could be a star. But what can you really compare him to? Like, what's his ceiling? What, like a D.D. Gregorius? So that's what we're shooting for, you know?
Javier Baez would be the ceiling, in my opinion. Maybe, like, you know, not MVP Javier Baez, but, you know, like, you know, kind of down to earth Javier Baez was a comparison I saw the other day. But,
I just, you know, hopefully he doesn't strike out like him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I was talking to my dad today about Jazz and how he's just kind of struggling right now. But, you know, what I was saying is, if he has a 750 to 800 OPS this year, and then he goes 2020, like, that's a damn good rookie year. That's a stellar rookie year. And he's only going to get better. You know what I mean? So if he goes 2020 in any form this year, and his plate discipline numbers are actually, even in this stretch, he's like K-ing under 30%, around 27, I think, and he's walking at like 9%. So his plate discipline numbers are actually pretty good. He's been taking his walks recently, and he still picks up like a hit every game or every other game or so. He's not really that bad in a slump right now, but he's going to get out of it. He's going to start hitting the ball out of the yard again. And, you know, I think Didi, like if you get Didi Gregorius, like that's a great player. You know what I mean? So if he ends up, if he turns into Didi Gregorius, I think that's a great, you know, potential. His ceiling is higher. I think his ceiling is higher than Didi. But if you're talking about realistic expectations, for him to become a player like Didi Gregorius would be huge for the Marlins. Didi's a guy I wanted the Marlins to go out and get in the offseason.
Yeah.
I've been the last two seasons that Didi's been available, I said the Marlins should push for him. So, you know, but I think, like I said, you know, he can still turn out to have a really great rookie year if he goes 2020.
Hey, I'm going to change the subject up on you guys a little bit here. And recently, they started incorporating the whole umpires checking the pitchers when they get on the mound. You know, how do you guys feel about that? My opinion on this is, should there be like some type of penalty or something on the team, on the opposing team, if maybe the manager's like, hey, go check them. You know what I'm saying? And then the guy has nothing. Maybe take away a challenge or something like that. You know what I mean? Because I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Sergio Romo's reaction, sure, that's funny, man. You know, like Joe Girardi, I don't know what he was thinking. He was like going out of his way, because then it's a slippery slope, because then you can have a manager trying to mess up a pitcher's timing in the middle of, like, you know, Sandy pitching in St. Louis. What if the manager's, oh, go check him out in the seventh inning, in the middle of an inning? That, you know, there has to be some sort of consequence. It should be like a challenge in a way where, you know, you use it, and if he's clean, then hey, like there should be some sort of consequence for sure. But you know, they can't really take away a challenge for, you know, so it's tough. I don't really know what they would use as a consequence, but something's got to be done. If not, everyone's just gonna be, you know, checking the pitchers every other inning, and it's gonna slow the game down even more.
Before the game yesterday, I was on the field talking to a couple of guys from the media, and one of them suggested you have like limits on mound visits now, and you have limits on challenges. There should be limits on how many times you can check a guy. You know what I mean? Because it would be ridiculous if you just check the guy every inning. You know, if he has a good inning, you just send an ump out there. And then the other thing I saw is, and this is a good idea, is you should have an umpire like in the dugout checking. You know what I mean? You don't have to do it on the field out in front of everybody. You can have an extra umpire in each dugout that comes over and does it, because then it leads to these public scenes, you know, and it's hilarious. Don't get me wrong. Like what Scherzer and Romo did is hilarious, but then it causes a scene, and it causes, you know, a distraction and talk about it to the point where we're talking about what Romo did and everything. And I think it would maybe be better to just kind of do it in the dugout so that it just kind of flies under the radar and there you go. But I definitely think like you want to check, be able to check a pitcher twice, you know, once at the beginning, once at the end, that's fine. But I think that really the key is to, you know, I think limiting it would be a really good idea, because it's just like a mound visit. It's just like a challenge, and we have limits on those. So,
hey, Eli, you want to get involved in this too?
It's still a lot to digest with the repercussions of all this. In fact, we're recording this on Thursday. I'll be intently watching, not to point fingers at anybody, but somebody like Cody Pote, who was totally off our radar at this time a few months ago. I mean, one of the things that makes him kind of distinct is the spin rate on his breaking balls. Those things are nastier than people ever thought. I think you can believe that he put in a lot of his own work to make that happen. But if you just look across the board at guys who are suffering the most because of these checks, it's the guys that have those super high spin rates on their pitches. And I'll be very curious. This is going to be his first start since those rules went totally into effect, and he's kind of a guy that's holding down a spot. So I'll be watching him pretty closely to see whether his pop-up success is something that is like fully legit, or whether he's somebody that may have gotten an advantage from the way that we used to handle pitching back in the day. But aside from that, we got to watch this play out.
You know, it was interesting. If you looked at Trevor's spin rates last night, and I'm not as, you know, sure about this one, because his spin rates aren't really elite. Like he's never a guy that has spun it like crazy, but they were really down across the board last night, and he clearly didn't have his best stuff. So that may have just been him, you know, not bringing his best stuff. He was still pretty solid, but it's something to watch across the league everywhere. I mean, you know, the guys that have been obvious are guys like Bauer and Cole and these guys with crazy spin rates. And now all of a sudden their spin rates are kind of coming back to earth a little bit, but Bauer still struck 10 guys out last night. So it's kind of like, okay, you know, maybe these guys are just really good and they, you know, they don't need the advantage, which is the whole thing, right? Like Scherzer gets pissed off and it's because he's just really good. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. He'll be a Hall of Famer, whether it comes out of you sticky stuff or not. So it's, you know, somebody asked me like, is this going to happen all the time? Is it going to be like this for the rest of the year? And no, it's not going to be like this for the rest of the year. It's the first week. So, you know, there's a magnifying glass on it right now and they're going to be really, really cautious with checking everybody. We just kind of got to let it play out. And I think eventually we'll fall into seeing it every now and then, a check before the game, a check after a guy comes off the mound, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, well, they got to catch somebody eventually. Right. You know, if they do this every single day for, honestly, we could be checking back in like 2 weeks. And if they don't find a single person with anything suspicious on their fingers, then the clamoring for this to stop is going to really heat up pretty fast. I think it's not going to be the end of the season. I think it's just a matter of weeks until the blowback becomes too strong if we don't actually catch anybody in the process.
Well, you got to be pretty stupid to be using it right now, because like I said, everybody's going to be looking, you know, everybody's going to be looking for it right now. So to use it this week, you got to be really, really stupid. But if they catch somebody in a week or so, you know, it gets interesting, but all of a sudden, if you don't start checking, you know, watch Bauer spin rates, watch this guy's spin rates, and they start going up, and then you got to check again. So, you know, I don't know. It's I'm very intrigued to see how it plays out over the rest of the year.
Yeah, what it was happens- refreshing to see Sandy pitch well, you know, knowing like I don't think he was ever someone that, you know, benefited from any of that stuff, but it's refreshing to see him. Everything, the spin rates look good across the board as well for his start against Toronto, and you know, it was definitely good to see.
Man, I'm just going to miss the whole, like, What if a guy is the flu game and the guy's just like, he's sneezing on the ball. True, you know what I'm saying? What, are they going to come at him? Come on, dude. Oh, I got the flu. Well, you know what I'm saying?
Somebody was saying, you're going to start seeing guys use hair gel, you know, and they're going to start going like this. And how can you tell a guy not to wear hair gel, like, you know, so I don't know.
I see hot in the back. How did the guy from Major League do it? He had a little bit of this, a little bit of that. When you can't hold a kid, you got to take care. You don't got the zip on your fastball. Hey, so we're getting closer to July, right? And July is when Marlins, Lone Depot Park, I'm sorry, opens to full capacity. What are the odds that we get a sellout crowd at Lone Depot Park?
You know, for those Yankee games, pretty high probability, honestly. I don't know if a sellout, I don't know if 36,000. But, you know, it should be, you know, a nice little 30,000 crowd for the Dodgers as well. Padres, maybe.
Will we ever see another sellout?
Opening day 2022, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So? We'll see a sellout eventually. And then, like, eventually this team's going to get into the playoffs. Like, they'll sneak into the playoffs some year, I think. You know what I mean? So, eventually, yeah, there's going to be a sellout. But, you know, I think the Marlins are really missing a huge opportunity, and maybe it would be easier if they were playing well. But a lot of these teams, when they went full capacity, like I know the Cubbies specifically, when they went full capacity, they were advertising the first game back as like opening day. This is second opening day, you know, like come out and it'll be just like opening day. They'll have the whole thing. And I think the Marlins are really missing an opportunity to promote this as a second opening day, because like Isaac said, opening day almost always sells out. You know, every year there's a huge crowd on opening day. So I think the Marlins, like if they were saying, okay, we're going to have, you know, it's going to be a second opening day, I think they could get a big crowd out there. But the Dodgers, the fact that it's the Dodgers and the fact that it's just full capacity, I think there'll be a pretty big crowd. But yeah, I mean, with the way the team's playing, I don't see a sellout happening anytime soon.
I tell you what, I had a conversation with somebody on set the other day and they told me how to get a sellout immediately. For the Marlins. All right, here I'm gonna hit you with the screwball. Derek Jeter retires for one day, puts himself in the lineup. Guaranteed sellout.
Yeah. Could you imagine like the one at bat thing back in the day with Adam Greenberg or whatever his name? Jeter takes one at bat. I think he could do a better job. I think he could do a better job hitting than some of the guys in this lineup could do right now. So it might not be a bad idea, actually.
That reminds me of when Barry Bonds used to be the hitting coach, and he had that young stud outfield, and he would talk to Yelich and Stanton and Ozuna and be like, watch, man, I could do a batting round with y'all. I'll hit the ball this way and that way and everything. And it was that work ethic, man. You would love to see like that, like those older guys rubbing off on the younger players. So
I would like to see Jeter talking like that a little more, you know, talking hitting with those guys, because Barry Bonds had a huge influence on Marcell Ozuna. Like, you know, you remember that year was kind of his breakout year when
he used to use Barry's bats.
Barry was the coach. Yeah. He was definitely kind of like that was like a breakout year for him. So I don't know. Yeah. We could use anything right now to get this offense jump started. So
yeah, yesterday was the first time Jeter was down on the field for in a while, though.
Yeah. I did see him talking to Marte the other day. I still haven't been on the field at the same time as Jeter. I don't know. I haven't been starstruck around many of the guys yet.
Keep it together, man. Just keep it together.
Yeah, he might be one of the guys. He might be one of the guys that would get me for sure growing up, you know, watching Jeter. So
I'm not gonna lie. When the first time I met Jeter, bro, I met him at the fan fest immediately after they acquired the team. First thing I told him, man, I came up to him, said, "Mr. Jeter, man, thank you so much for buying the team. It's time that somebody, you know what I'm saying, bought the team that cared about baseball. Like, thank you, baseball gods. I'm sick and tired of being the laughing stock of the league." You know what I'm saying? The guy looked at me like it was crazy. It was an amazing experience. And now it's like, you know what I'm saying? I got out of it. I've been able to work with the guy. But yeah, man. Derek,
I got a random note for you guys. I think last night there was Jorge Posada was photographed in the press box. And that's the first time I saw him around the team, I think, all year. Because he was supposed to be an advisor to the team definitely in 2019. And then I think he even said that sometime earlier this year that due to COVID, like, they kind of scaled back his role. But they seem to be on nice terms again. I wonder what they were talking about. That was up in, like, the owner's box, one of the other photographers.
He was always, like, a guy that was rumored to be, like, the next manager. Hey, you know, so it was always, like, just going straight Yankees all around. I'm sure that would stop the narrative that Jeter's just building the Miami Yankees, but the Yankees won a lot when Jeter was there. So I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, man. And actually Jorge was a coach of mine at Gulliver. And so I reached out to him in 2020 to see, you know, if there's any opportunity with the Marlins. And he was like, "Listen, Isaac, I'm not really, you know, he's not doing much with the team." Cause I think for 2020, he wasn't doing much at all. He really scaled back. I also talked with Andre Dawson to see if he was doing anything with the Cubs. And almost every single job was scaled back a ton in 2020. So, yeah, it's good to see that he's back. Or, hey, anyway.
Well, man, let's get into the final subject out of here, the final topic at the barbecue. I'm going to ask you guys, who do you think is going to win this series? Are the Marlins going to be able to get hot? You know, the pitching matchups, Joe Ross, Cody Petit. We got who else is going to be on the mound? We got Zach Thompson.
I know they'll see Scherzer at some point for sure.
Scherzer's on Sunday versus Sandy Alcantara.
Oh, man.
Ooh. And you know we're going to lose 1-0.
Anyway, that'll
be a great matchup.
Marley's barbecue. What are you bringing to the barbecue, Ethan? I'm telling you, hey, come through. You know what I'm saying? What were you like?
I guess you brought me on here to talk about my experience at Wrigley Field. So I guess I got to do it. If you haven't been to Wrigley Field before, and I actually was writing an article about my experience and I lost it. I don't know where it went. My words spazzed out and I just straight up don't have it, but I'm going to try and get it back. But if you haven't been and you really consider yourself a baseball fan, like, this is just, you got to do it. It's the most incredible baseball experience you'll ever have. And it's not even just a baseball experience. It's like a party atmosphere up there. So what's so cool about Wrigley, what's so unique about Wrigley is that it's literally dropped right into the middle of a neighborhood. And I guess technically the neighborhood was kind of built around it. But in this neighborhood, it's like kids that live in Chicago, this is where they grew up going out, you know, like when they were too young to go out, this was the place to go, you know? So it reminded me of going to a game at UF, like a football game, because win or lose, the Cubs lost on Saturday, and on Saturday afternoon after the game, me and my buddies and my dad, you know, we went to a bar close by. And it was like the Cubs had just won the World Series. Like, you know, everybody was out, everybody was having a good time. Everybody was partying and dancing and enjoying themselves. And actually this place is called Sluggers. And if you ever go to Wrigley Field, you got to go to this place. There's a batting cage upstairs, and there had been a batting cage for years in this place. And then when Chris Bryant won the MVP Red Bull sponsored the batting cage. So now it's like the Chris Bryant MVP cage or whatever. And you go upstairs and there's four bays that you can take pitches in. And my dad and I did the slow pitch because we saw the fast pitch and we were like, there's no chance we're going to even touch anything there. So we did the slow pitch and these bats were like stinging my hands. I was getting off some pretty pathetic cuts up there, but it's just a cool thing. Like, where else are you going to go to a bar and there's a, you know, there's a whole arcade and there's Papa Shot and this and that and the other Pac-Man, all this shit. And then there's a batting cage right in the middle of it. So it's just it's a cool experience, man. And the bleachers are unlike anything I've ever been a part of. It's like I said, it's like a student section at the Gator game. You know, there's heckling, but it's all in good fun. Everybody's just enjoying themselves. Have you guys seen these cup snakes, this new trend?
We saw you at the bottom of them drinking.
Dude, the cup snake, the cup snake that I in left field on Saturday. I'm not kidding. They made a J. Like it went up the left, all the way up the left field bleacher, came back around and went like halfway up. It was incredible. It's just a party atmosphere. The Cubs lost 11-1 that day. You never would have known. You know, Duvall hit two home runs. Jesus hit a home run right at a guy that was heckling the shit out of him right behind me and my dad. It's rowdy. It's rowdy. And you got to go. Listen, Alex, I know that, you know, you just went to Fenway, so I'm sure that you're looking to do some ballpark tours here. Go to Wrigley and you cannot do anything besides sit in the bleachers. Don't even think about sitting in the seats, man. Like, I've done it in the seats and it's nice. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful park. There is no atmosphere in baseball like sitting in the bleachers at Wrigley Field. It is just the most incredible experience. So you got to do it, man.
It's definitely on my bucket list. I can't wait. Ideally, yeah. I'm going to try to check it out when it's the Marlins Cubs. You mentioned, like, I definitely went to Boston. I went to check out Fenway. It was my first time out there. And like, one of the cool spots out there was the bleacher bar. They got a bleacher bar right in center field. And like, it's great because you could see all the like center field, like your ground level. Mm-hmm. You can have a drink. Like, the atmosphere was great. Like, the whole vibe, like exactly what you're talking about. Like, how around Wrigley, they have like a little town. Like, this same thing in Fenway. Like, they just have like this whole little town and just like Fenway. And like, people are so happy and joyful. Mm-hmm. And like, the series was three games. The last game got postponed, right? Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to catch the second game, and the Fish lost. Rogers was on the mound, but it was I think it was 3-1 final score. But man, I had the chance to get on the Green Monster. Let's go, amazing. Marlins. You know what I'm saying? Let's go, Marlins, on top of the freaking Green Monster. You know what I'm
saying? That's amazing,
like,
dude.
I met a bunch of Marlins fans out there. I was like, man, this is crazy. You know, like, I just love the whole environment. Like, I would love for Marlins Nation to eventually get to that state, bro. Like, that whole atmosphere, it doesn't matter if we lost 10-1, like you're talking about, you know, like the Chicago the Cubs lost. The following day, the game got postponed. I showed up. And you couldn't tell me, like, you couldn't tell anybody at that stadium the game was postponed, bro. That thing was jam-packed. It was, like, 28,000 people in there. It was just, like, and when they, I was, like, today's game has been postponed at Fenway Park. People were booing, boo. You know, it was just hilarious. Like, I love the passion. And, man, I just, it's so beautiful to see baseball, and definitely go check out Fenway Park.
No, the cool thing about Wrigley is it really is the friendly confines. Like, the people there are just the nicest people in the world. And on Friday, my dad and I, you know, we got there early because we spent the whole day kind of exploring Wrigley. And then the bleachers are general admission. So if you want to get a good seat, you got to get there early. So we got there early, 2 hours before game time, all 3 days. We sat first row, second row, first row. In right field, left field, right field. And on Friday, we met these guys who we became buddies with. Like, you know, we're palling around with them, joking around with them. One of the guys was a Marlin fan from New Orleans. And we got to know him. You know, he knew about Fish Stripes, happened to know about Fish Stripes. I told him, you know, how I write for the team and I write for Fish Stripes. And it was so cool to make these connections. And then they're our buddies now, you know, like the kids played for Nebraska football. His name's Colin Miller. And I looked him up and, you know, I looked into his numbers and stuff, and kid was a good football player there. And shout out to Paul and the boys. They know exactly who I'm talking about. Those are my guys. And we loved them so much that, you know, they were going back on Sunday and we were going back on Sunday. We sat with them again on Sunday, you know, and it's just that kind of atmosphere where it's just all about enjoying yourself, enjoying baseball, enjoying life. You know, this was my first outing post pandemic really out into the world, out into a full capacity, you know, sporting event. And I always told myself during the pandemic, I would never take that shit for granted again. I would never take a full capacity crowd for granted again. And this is the reason why, man. You know, I went out there, I was enjoying life. It was Father's Day weekend. My dad and I, baseball has always been our thing, you know, so we were just enjoying ourselves so much. And it was just a reminder of celebrating life, enjoying life, not taking anything for granted ever, enjoying all those moments with your family. And it was a beautiful weekend, and it's a cathedral to baseball. It's a religious experience for a baseball fan when you walk in that place and you see it. And you know, I was with a buddy of mine. I also met up with some friends from Chicago, you know, Cubs fans, friends that I had known for years. I'd never met these guys before. They came, some of my really good friends over here. I'd never met these guys. And I walked out, you know, from the concourse back into the bleachers with them once. And this kid's been going to Cubs games his entire life. You know, he had been to 4 already that year. And he looks at me, goes, dude, this never gets old. Like, it never gets old. And so go to Wrigley Field. Go. It doesn't matter who's playing. It doesn't matter who you root for. It doesn't matter where you're from. They'll accept you. They'll bring you in. You'll have a great time. You know, the last time I went to Wrigley, I saw the Phillies. I saw the Dodgers. And it's an incredible baseball experience. Incredible baseball. I don't know where else you can get anything like it in baseball, because there's really only the 3 stadiums left. I know, Isaac, you said you've been to all 3 of them. You know, it's Wrigley, it's Fenway, and it's Dodger Stadium, because, mm-hmm. you know, Shea is gone. The old Yankee Stadium is gone. You know, some of these historic ballparks are gone. And so go to the ones while you can, you know, go to Wrigley. I don't think they're ever going to take that place down. You know, they would have there would be riots in Chicago if they ever took that place down. But go to it, see it, enjoy it. It's an amazing baseball experience. And
honestly,
go expose yourself to other baseball experiences as well, because everybody does it differently than Miami. You know, Miami's that party atmosphere a little bit. Every place does it different. And it's so cool to see.
I'm glad that you shared about the bleacher seats, because I honestly was looking into getting like the Bartman seat.
Mm-hmm.
Get my own opinion on it.
I'll tell you what. Every person that works at Wrigley Field knows, could tell you what seats Bartman sat in. You know, everybody knows where, you know, obviously everybody knows where it happened. But if you ask somebody that's worked there for a long time what seats Bartman sat in, they'll tell you, and they'll send you right down there, and you can go take your picture. But yeah, the history there is amazing.
Hey, before we close out this segment, you know, I was thinking about that bleacher bar, and I was also thinking about the clips of Manny Ramirez hopping into the scoreboard. Now it all makes sense. He was hitting up a bar, getting a little drink. Anyway, man. So our final segment of this is this or that, this or that. We're going to talk about the series. Who do you got, Isaac? You got Nats or Marlins?
Well, you know, for game one here, I don't know how well Poteet's going to handle it. You know, like Eli mentioned, you know, it's his first outing since the new rules. But I think Ross, what might be a good matchup for us offensively. So I think we'll probably split the two games. There's a couple lefties, Corbin and Lester, pitching on Friday and Saturday, respectively. So we'll have to, I say we split at least, you know, Sandy will be a fun game on Sunday against Scherzer. I'm definitely trying to go to that game. Nationals only one game under 500, man. They're playing pretty good baseball. They're red hot. So it's going to be tough. So I'd say we split it.
Ethan.
Yeah. You never know with the Marlins. Like, it's so hard to predict with this team, because if the offense can have a couple good games like they did at Wrigley, they can win 3 or 4 of these. But I'm really looking forward to that Sandy and Scherzer matchup on Sunday. That's going to be something special. But I'm not feeling too good about the Marlin offense right now. So I'm just going to go straight up and say that I think the Nationals, they're red hot right now. Schwarber's on fire. I hate to say it, but I'm going to think the Nationals take. I could see a split. I'm all over the place. I think I see a split. Yeah. I think, you know, it's hard to predict any team, especially the Marlins. Their pitching keeps them in it so often. Hard to see them losing 3 or 4. So
Eli,
Marlins are going to win 3 out of 4. Just make sure they got to pitch Anthony Bender every single game. And then that's the recipe for success. I don't know why Don Mattingly hasn't caught on to it already. But I think they're going to win 3 out of 4. I think they're overdue for probably 2 of those are going to be really nail biters. We've put out the stat like a million times how bad they are in one run games. I keep betting against that, like not continuing as extreme as it has been. They'll be all right. it's not going to change like the outlook on their entire season, but this could be a pretty fun weekend.
I'm looking forward to, personally myself, I'm looking forward to the Sandy Alcantara bobblehead giveaway day.
All right. Yeah, bro. That's on Saturday.
That's on Saturday.
The first 7,500.
I traded the Saturday game for the Friday game.
No, yeah, go on Saturday. I'm celebrating my birthday on Saturday with like a whole bunch of friends and family in one of the suites. So definitely try and ride on Saturday.
Hey, there you go. They have it turned up at the suite with Isaac.
Everybody is invited to the
Everybody's
Isaac
invited,
birthday
slide
party.
Up, slide up to the crib, bro.
Maddie. Oh, the key word for you to get in is Isaac's favorite Marlin ever. Who is it?
Isaac's favorite. Okay, Josh Johnson.
All right, so we gotta say we say JJ. That's a good one. Get in.
All right, yeah.
Alex, who's your favorite Marlin ever? I don't think I've ever gotten this out of you.
Man, my favorite Marlin ever is like a two-way tie. Like, I'm just gonna keep it at that. I'm gonna say it's Miguel Cabrera. That's okay. My favorite Marlin.
That's
ever.
A good one.
And
that's
then one. Before Miguel, it was Gary Sheffield.
Yeah, the man. I think mine's probably G. I still love Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, he was my favorite player. Yeah. Like. Since he made his debut,
I think that's
in high school, bro. I was like pumping him up. All I was like, he sucks, strikes out. Like, bro, he was my favorite fucking player.
No, he's still one of my favorites around the world.
Yeah, he's cool. And then he just started talking shit about us, and then I disliked him a little bit.
Cute. Hey, can we find that clip? It's gonna stay away for a long, long time. You remember what he said? They freak. Eli, favorite Marlin.
It's Jose Fernandez for sure.
Yeah, that's. Unbeatable.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He signed a ball for me. A happy birthday one, actually.
Oh, you know what? Going back to the Sandy thing, my bad. It's the first 7,500 people that go to the game get the Sandy Alcantara bobblehead. Get your bobblehead before he gets shipped away, Miami.
only in the mind of Alex Contreras is he getting traded.
Yeah, no, that guy's gonna be here. He's gonna be a Marlin life.
I hope man.
He better be.
Time to tart.
They're wearing the Sugar Kings uniforms on Saturday too.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah. Oh,
I was wondering last night if when they're gonna wear those again.
Coming back.
They're doing it once a month.
Yeah. Hopefully they stack up on the new jerseys too.
I saw. Yeah. You know what? I did see Alex. I was at the game last night. The store, at least inside the stadium, you know, the one on the concourse, on the first baseline, looked restocked with a bunch of Sugar Kings. I don't know if they had Sandy jerseys. Jerseys last time, but they had jerseys for Sandy this time. So
bet. All right, cool. Well, this is Alex Contreras signing out. Thank you so much to Ethan for joining us, Isaac, Eli Sussman. Absolutely. This is Marlins Barbecue signing out. Go Fish.